nagging. Naturalist. It's the Nagging Naturalist Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Nagging Naturalist Podcast. For this month, we are going to step away from the usual schedule of focusing on one animal, and instead we are going to be doing a takeover. And during this takeover, I'm going to be having wildlife experts coming onto the podcast, sharing their knowledge, their expertise, and experience in wildlife research, conservation, and study. Today, I have Danielle with me, who is an absolute delight if you've never seen her on Twitter and Instagram, actually. I love watching the really cool videos her and Chelsea, who's also a herpetologist, do, where they discuss wildlife, rate wildlife, and sometimes drag on wildlife. But she's here today to do her takeover, and so she is going to be sharing her wonderful expertise with us. So thank you so much for joining us, Danielle.
Not a problem. I'm so excited to talk to you. People often look at me kind of strange when I say, like, oh, let's go to the cemetery and go birding. But, I don't know, they don't realize that cemetery birding is actually, like, a centuries-old tradition. Like, I'm not doing anything new. I'm just, you know, kind of refocusing people on the fact that, like, hey, a cemetery is a great place to go for so many reasons. And that's definitely one of the things I want to talk to you about. But also, like, the history of cemeteries, too. And hopefully some people are able to, like, destigmatize some of the taboos that Western culture especially has around using cemeteries as a recreational area, because it's there. We should definitely be using it.
That's a fair point, because I would agree that obviously Western cultures have extremely different points of view when it comes to the dead, how we should treat the dead, how we think about the dead, and it's a weird dichotomy of respecting the dead and also fearing the dead. So I can certainly understand how that would create some stigmas around what you do as a cemetery birder. So I guess one of the ways we can kind of start out with that is I would actually be very interested in the history aspect that you brought up, because I've unintentionally cemetery birded before. Down in Southern Maryland in St. Mary City, there are some old places with very, very old tombstones, and I've just happened to take pictures of birds in that space, but I never really thought about it as a practice.
Yeah, it's definitely a common thing. So some of the history about cemeteries is, like, a lot of cemeteries were literally the first parks for the United States. They were usually these, like, rural green areas because people wanted to stop burying dead in the city limits because, you know, spread of diseases and stuff. So as cemeteries got pushed out to more rural areas, they started becoming, like, these areas for naturalists, especially horticulturalists, to cultivate these really awesome areas, but also celebrate their dead that they would bury out there at the same time. So while people would go visit their loved ones, they would also have a picnic or go for a stroll, because that was, like, really one of the only places they could go and get out of the city. So Greenwood Cemetery, which is in Brooklyn, it has, how many acres is that? It's 478 acres, and it's in the middle of Brooklyn. So if you think of, like, New York City, it's kind of hard to think of, like, where is a green space besides Central Park? And a fun fact, Greenwood Cemetery was actually the inspiration of Central Park and also Prospect Park on top of that. So without this really awesome, huge cemetery that has, like, all these ponds and different tree diversities in certain areas, like, it's a whole ecosystem within itself. You can see that in the cemetery, but also you can see, like, the inspiration of that in Central Park and Prospect Park at the same time. I think that's super cool to think that the most famous park in North America was inspired by a cemetery, but it's also just this absolutely gorgeous cemetery, and I cannot wait to be able to visit it someday. It's actually really, really well known in the birding community to be a really awesome spot to go bird watching.
Oh my gosh, you got me, like, rocking back and forth over here with a smile on my face, like, thinking of my next trip to New York. Because I'm just a few hours south of it, so I periodically visit New York. I don't get to frequent it as much as I want to because it is like a 4 to 6 hour trip depending on where we're going. But now I'm just sitting here like, I've never really planned a trip to New York where I'm like, oh man, I can't wait to go to the cemetery.
It does sound a little strange, but I have also like planned road trips. I'm like, oh, I can go visit this cemetery and this cemetery. Like, I want to base a road trip simply on the ability to go visit cemeteries that I want to see. And not just because of birding. Like, cemetery architecture and art is really prevalent in cemeteries. So they're just cool to go and experience art. Well, who is it? I think it's Mount Auburn Cemetery in Cambridge actually has an artist residency program where they, like, pick one artist out of all these applicants to, like, I don't know, make whatever it is, some type of craft, some type of idea. I've seen, like, films, sculptures, etc. And they, like, just set up shop at the cemetery. Also, there's a cemetery in Atlanta. So, Oakland Cemetery is in Atlanta, and it has this really awesome, it's like stained glass window building. I don't know how to describe it besides that, but it's just absolutely gorgeous, colorful. It's probably displayed on their website. But yeah, cemeteries can be fun and cool and really awesome. They also have like a teaching center like at the cemetery for like outdoor classrooms. Like, I just think you can desensitize people or like destigmatize like hanging out in a cemetery by providing these really cool things. We can break taboos around using these green spaces just by talking about it and providing really interesting resources in these areas.
I have to say, I googled that cemetery when you brought it up, and oh my god, the pictures are gorgeous.
It's so pretty. It looks like a botanical garden or like a garden center or something. Like, it's so pretty.
It does. And, you know, I feel like this shows a lot more reverence for the dead than the, you know, carefully manicured lawns with the, you know, tombstones. Like, if I believed in it, because I'm definitely one of those people who's all about, like, you know, the earthship barrels and all that stuff, like, something a little bit more naturalistic, but I, you know, if I was somebody who was going to be buried and have, like, a headstone and all that stuff, like, this is the kind of place where I would want to be buried, surrounded by nature, providing for nature. You know, I really don't find it attractive to put people in the ground with this nicely mowed lawn that has, you know, very little atmosphere. These are really cool. The architecture, the nature, it's very stunning. I would love to be buried there.
So, interesting that you say that you are interested in green burials or, you know, something along the lines of that, but also providing something for, you know, nature. This might sound like right up your alley, but Prairie Creek Conservation Cemetery, which is in Florida, you can have, like, a conservation burial. And basically, you're naturally buried, there's no embalms, like, you know, this, people have been buried naturally for, millennia, so this isn't anything new, but, like, they also take a portion of the funds to hold the funeral to put into conservation work, and they have, like, a whole conservation area, like, you can walk around it. I think it's, like, 93 acres that you can explore on these trails. Your burial site is also beautified with natural native flowers, so you have native species also in your area. So obviously that's going to have so many benefits for the wildlife that are, you know, probably going to be in the area that you're walking around in. It's also adjacent to some more conservation area. That area is not specifically used for burials, just the 93 acres I mentioned before. But it connects to a larger network of green space. So just a really awesome way to be remembered. And I think if I can find something like that in another state, I mean, I can't really predict where I'm going to die, but I would like to have a natural burial just like that. Like, it would just be so cool to be able to do that. Like, I figured out how I want to be, like, laid to rest and remembered, which is kind of, I don't know, some people think that's weird, but I really don't, because it could happen at any time, and it's just like, let's just be prepared, just in case it happens. This sounds really cool. I would like it.
Oh, I totally agree with you on that one. I don't know why. I've always, like, considered my death in advance, like, you know, what would I want to do? Especially because for those of us in conservation, we understand that a lot of the synthetic things that are applied to the body to make it look attractive for, like, viewings and stuff are very harmful. And even things like having your body burned, you know, that still sends toxic fumes up into the atmosphere. And it's very difficult to sometimes find a truly green burial when the human body is full of toxins, has toxins applied to it. If it's burned, it spews out toxins. Like, there's so many problems with how we treat our bodies throughout our lives and how we treat our bodies in death. And I have to admit, when I knew that we were going to talk about cemetery birding, I knew that I was going to be surprised by some of the things you shared, but I did not see something as amazing as green burials coming up, because this is really great information. I really hope that, you know, by the time I pass on, that I don't have to go all the way to Florida to die, because I really hope I don't die in Florida. But, you know, Florida is the Australia of the U.S. in some ways, so if I did die in Florida, it's not totally unexpected.
Yeah, I also don't want to die in Florida. But, you know, if it happens, it happens. I think it's like a 24 to 48 hour window that you have to, like, get the body to them, because, you know, it's natural burial. You gotta make it happen, like, real fast, or else decomposition happens and whatnot. So, yeah, we'll see. It'll be interesting. So, fun fact about, like, my cemetery birding journey. I mentioned already that cemetery burning is not new. Like, I'm not the first person, and I'm definitely not the last person to do this. In fact, my very first time going birding, I was a junior in undergraduate school at Texas A&M University Kingsville, which is in South Texas. And my first ornithology class, we went out birding for one of the labs, and the place that we went to was a down-the-street cemetery that was relatively small, but it had a bunch of trees, and it also sat on the other side of, like, this big open grassland. And the first time I was there, I was like, this is so weird. Like, how are we just walking around, like, frolicking through the flowers, looking for birds? Like, I had never hung out in a cemetery. I'm trying to think if I had even been in a cemetery, like, before that, because even my family, like, we don't really go visit, like, my immediate family, we don't really go visit people's graves, and I can't really remember if I have anybody who's close to me who has died that would, you know, inspire me to go visit them or remember them at a grave site. So it was just a lot of firsts for me that day, but we saw a bunch of cool birds, and I got, like, a really awesome species list, and that was my first time birding. So even though I was a little bit uncomfortable, I was like, okay, I can dig it. I can get used to this. But, like, the fact that I was inspired by, I guess, death to keep doing this hobby, yeah, I don't know, something about it just, it seems strange, but I would like to also provide that same opportunity for someone else in the future.
Was that intentional when you said, I can dig it? So it's really cool that you've had these opportunities, and obviously not everybody gets that same kind of facilitation with these opportunities. So, like you said, your very first time being in the cemetery, you know, it seemed a little uncomfortable. It took a little getting used to. So, you know, is there, like, a guide? Is there, like, a cemetery birding 101 that kind of really helps bring a little bit more comfort to people who are unsure about this, you know, whether they're into birding in general or if they just want to take advantage of natural spaces in their area to appreciate nature? You know, what makes a cemetery a place that typically has all this negative association with it a good place to go? How do you feel comfortable in that space, you know?
So, I guess my first-timer's guide to cemetery birding, I would definitely say bring a friend or two, especially if you're a person that gets spooked. You know, there's nothing spooky in the cemetery, but it helps to have someone there with you to, like, I don't know, just share the moment, especially, and to lean on. So bring a friend. I would also say, as far as, like, cemetery etiquette, don't step on the graves. I just think that's kind of rude to do. try to walk around as best as you can. I also, if I do happen to step on someone's headstone, like, I apologize. another, like, this is just a personal me thing. Like, I greet everybody when I get there. I'm like, hey, y'all, I'm just here to bird. And then when I leave, I'm just like, okay, thanks for the good times. Like, that's just, like, my own little ritual. But it makes me feel better when I'm, like, using this space. But, like, I don't know. I kind of feel like they enjoy that I'm going out there to use the space to have fun and recreate.
It's really interesting that you say that, because when I grew up, I lived for a few years in Okinawa, Japan, and before we were able to move into military housing, we had to rent a house that was off base in the neighborhoods with the native Okinawans. And the house we rented actually had family mausoleums in the back. And I think it's so funny that you talk about greeting the people in the graveyard, because I used to do that all the time when I'd play in the backyard. Like, before I would enter that space where the mausoleums were, I would say good morning to the family. I would give it a light bow because I was so nervous. I had never lived next to a place where the dead rest. So I find it funny that you make that same connection of trying to be respectful by actually communicating with them and treating them like, you know, people, which they were at one point. And it's a really interesting thing to have somebody who had, you know, such a different experience from me make that same connection.
That's so heartwarming. I love that we have, like, that shared connection of, like, just grieving the dead. I don't know, it's just respectful. It's like, that's their, it's like their house, quote unquote. I wouldn't walk into somebody's house and just be like, nah, this is mine.
So, you mentioned, you know, not walking in and treating it like it's your house, which, of course, is an unfortunate thing that people like me have done throughout history. And with all the recent social dialogue happening, I was actually able to find people like you and Chelsea and all these wonderful wildlife specialists on Twitter through the really cool activism that you guys have done through things like Black AF and STEM and Birders Week and things like that. Have you found that a lot more people have approached you and are more interested in learning how to be in these spaces and to explore wildlife in these natural places?
Yeah, absolutely. But on top of that, I feel like being Black in nature especially is kind of just something that's, you know, part of our daily lives. Like, I grew up being, like, the outdoorsy kid because of my grandparents and things like that. But it is also really nice to see that other people are now inspired to go out and do a new hobby because they see people like them also enjoying that hobby. So definitely have seen people, you know, having a resurgence of going out. And on top of that, people and allies have been like, oh, how can we help facilitate a more enjoyable and accessible space for people who might have felt uncomfortable because of some type of discriminatory actions that have happened to them historically and actively. So it is nice to see that people are becoming more aware. And I'm hoping this movement does not, like, get brushed under the blanket like other movements have been in the past. But I still feel really optimistic and really positive about the impact that we have been able to make. And having it stick in people's brains and having it stick in people's actions and daily lives for a lot longer than, you know, I've typically seen happen.
Yeah, there's definitely been a lot of energy this year. It's been very gratifying to see because when I moved to Baltimore at the beginning of 2016, I came in just as the Freddie Gray protests were happening in Baltimore, and the dialogue was not met with a lot of positivity, to where this year, with everything that's happened, there's been a lot more positive interactions with the community and with protesters. At least in Baltimore, I know some cities are struggling more than others, but on places like Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, I've definitely seen some of the Black Lives Matter and the Black AF and STEM, Birders Week and stuff. It was met with so much more positivity and support than it has in previous years, and even just, you know, you guys have just kept rolling with it. It's been amazing, you know, because what is it? Right now we've got the Black Mammalogists and there's been Elasma Brank Week. It's been amazing seeing all these people coming together and doing all these amazing things to lift up that community. And I hope it's going to become kind of like a tradition. Like, it wasn't just like Black Birders Week in 2020. Hopefully you guys do it again next year at the same time and continue it like a tradition, because I don't think it's going to lose steam. I think that the community has been very galvanized by the actions that you guys took early on in the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would also love for, you know, another reoccurring, I mean, let's just say it's going to happen every year, because it was a lot of fun to do. But also, I just think it was such a light in people's lives, especially in such a dark time surrounding a lot of deaths of Black people at the hands of, like, police brutality and white supremacy, and also a global pandemic. Like, it was just a really heavy, hard time for a bunch of people, and I feel like Black Burgers Week was able to be, like, a little light that, you know, gave people a little boost of energy, some resurgence of hope, and a sense of community is what we were really aiming for, and I definitely think we were able to help provide that.
Absolutely. I think that it couldn't have happened at a better time in some ways, because, of course, we don't want things like this to be triggered by something as horrific as people being killed through actions like police brutality. But I do think that, at the very least, the pandemic really helped kind of facilitate things like Black Birders Week, because all of us were craving to be outside and wanted an excuse to be out in nature. And the idea of going outside and practicing new skills or things that you learned through things like Black Birder Week really kind of helped people through a very difficult time. And I think that had this happened a year or two ago, it may not have met the same success, because people weren't in that same headspace. They weren't craving the escape from the awful reality that they were living with, you know, the issues of Black Lives Matter and police brutality. And at the same time, we all just wanted a break from the pandemic.
I really think this pandemic has been able to slow people down and let them, you know, like, marinate with their feelings of, you know, racist actions happen, and it's likely that everyone has racism in them. We just need to figure out how to be better allies and actually understand, you know, how day-to-day actions can contribute to racism. I think the pandemic has helped people slow down and, like, study up, like, actually read books, actually listen, and amplify voices of people who are trying to explain how and why these racist actions have been, not even just racism, like, a whole bunch of social justice and social movements and change have been able to be paid more attention to. I hope people are able to, you know, figure out how we can actually provide equity to everyone. And I hope that doesn't slow down as the pandemic eventually goes away, and eventually we return to our normal day-to-day lives. I just hope people aren't bored in this moment and have found, you know, social justice as a little hobby they can partake in to, you know, help time go by. That's one of my concerns. I really hope that when we get back to our regularly scheduled programming, that all this action and all this excitement and all this moving and shaking, especially from our allies, stops happening.
Yeah, I can definitely understand the concern, because, of course, we have seen, you know, some of that happen, some of the virtue signaling happening from certain groups, and then we see their actions and their words later, and they're in conflict with that claim they made of being an ally. So I definitely understand the concern of the community in, you know, what happens when things go back to quote-unquote normal. Are you going to continue to be this staunch ally that you've been throughout, you know, the pandemic and the Black Lives Matter protests, or are you going to go back to, you know, whatever else you were doing before and just kind of push this time of being a keyboard activist aside? I know that it has been a concern, and I completely understand it. It's one of those things where people who want to be allies have to understand that they shouldn't be scared to be called a racist, because, you know, it's not necessarily about intentional racism, using things like slurs or actively discriminating against people. It's also in the unintentional actions that we take that we don't realize the consequences of, or we don't want to think about what the consequences are. And, you know, it takes a little bit of deprogramming. We can't pretend like we're going to be better overnight simply because we decided to be, you know, supporters of Black Lives Matter or, you know, Black AF and STEM and things like that. And I am hopeful that even if obviously not all the people who said that they are allies keep to that, I have seen some people very genuinely trying their best to, you know, whenever they're called out, they don't get upset, they don't get angry at the person who called them out, even if that person said things very angrily. They've apologized, they've taken a step back and said, you know what, you're right, I didn't realize what I was saying or what I was doing, and I will do my best to make sure that, you know, I don't do this in the future or I do it differently. So I do think that at the very least, what we've seen happening during this time of social unrest has helped to educate at least some of the population. Maybe not everybody, maybe not everybody really well, but I do feel very hopeful about a lot of people who have taken a step back, have heard the things that are being shared, and with the new context that they have, especially now that they have visual evidence, which is one of those things that they shouldn't necessarily have had to wait to have, but now that they've seen more of what happens to people in the Black community, whether it's when they try to go out and burn peace or even when they're just trying to drive down the street, you know, I am hopeful that this has sparked some social change that will snowball into something greater in the future. I know after years of watching Black Lives Matter protests that it's never going to happen overnight, and it's certainly not going to happen within a year, but I do think that the positivity that was shared in the Black community through all these different initiatives of things like, you know, the Black Birders Week, God, what else do we have? We had Black and Neuro, Black and Chem, Black and Botany, just all these amazing movements that really helped to not only lift up the voices of people in this community, but to help kind of decolonize the white community that is often like, oh, well, I don't see that many people of color in this field. You know, how am I supposed to lift up people's voices if I don't know? Well, now you don't have an excuse. Now you've seen them. They're all over Twitter. You have no excuse for not, you know, being a good ally and lifting up these people.
Yeah, all of that, definitely. If this listener, whoever is listening right now, if you missed any of these events or if you're not even sure what we're talking about, definitely please go look through these hashtags. There's a lot of great information resources there. But I mean, if you missed it, you missed the party. Hop on while you can. The most recent one that I've seen is Black in Climate, which is, I believe, for a Black climate scientist. So, hop on that one while you can before it is also over.
Yeah, what was it? There was a Black in Nature and a Black in National Parks Black Mammologist Week. Is either, God, has it come up yet? I lose track because there are so many. And people who aren't following them really are missing out because the content is phenomenal.
It really is. Especially Black and National Parks Week. That was another really good week. All these weeks have been absolutely phenomenal. But especially the ones that are natural resource gauge. Like, they speak to me. I can't really relate to some of the ones that are not natural resource science based, but I really loved watching what everybody has done so far.
I agree. I don't understand all of what I read in Black and Neuro. I tried my best to support it because, you know, it's cool. Like, I wish I understood, you know, brain science better, but it's really not my specialty. But Black Mammologist Week is upcoming this week. So September 13th through the 19th is Black Mammologist Week. So that's one of the next ones coming up.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, although I think we both established our feelings about certain mammals, so.
Yes. I don't think we have the time to get into that right now.
No. But I definitely want to ask if, you know, if there's any other wisdom or experiences that you wanted to share about cemetery birding in particular, because I have to say, it really is like the coolest, like, gothiest birding I've ever heard of. And it's something that I, especially living in Baltimore and surrounded by tons of very old and very beautiful cemeteries, you know, I basically want to get my feet wet in this birding because I look forward to the fact that there's barely going to be people there and there's going to be a lot more wildlife there.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's, you know, one of the things that I've been pressing a lot when I talk about cemetery birding is the fact that, again, we are in a pandemic. So going to, like, the usual park that you went to, or the trails, or the nature centers, that might not be an option, either because there's too many people, or they might be closed, or if you're like me, you never plan ahead, and just show up somewhere, and you're like, oh, you should have had a reserved spot 2 days ago, and I'm like, oh no, now I have to drive an hour back home, and wasted a bunch of time. So I don't want that to happen to people, whereas cemeteries, there's always parking, you don't have to do reservations. And there's literally, I rarely run into people, and if you do, y'all are usually not trying to talk to each other, and you just go your opposite ways. So cemetery birding is amazing. You also get to see some really cool architecture. I keep looking for, like, what the best headstone is, and I think I just saw it this weekend. It literally looked like a UFO in the cemetery. It was so bright and shiny. I've never seen anything like it. It was like a bunch of sheet metal shaped into like this really shiny, pointy triangle.
That sounds wild.
I've also been shown the grave of a soldier from the Revolutionary War this past weekend also, and I think that's also one of like the coolest grave sites I've seen before. That war was a long time ago.
Oh, I saw your picture from that. That was really cool. I've actually seen the same site because, like I told you on Twitter, like we roll through there. Like my partner has family in the, what is it called? The Boot of Missouri or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I've got my grandmother up in Iowa. And so we pass through that area. I saw the picture and I was like, I know that.
Small cemetery world.
Pretty much.
Well, that shiny UFO headstone is in the same cemetery as that headstone, the Revolutionary War soldier. So if you're ever in the area, I'll definitely show you the fancy shiny one, too.
Oh, that'd be awesome, because let me tell you what, when we're in Missouri, I need a nerd. I mean, I don't mind visiting the family, but literally none of his family is wildlife people. Like, some of them have bragged to me about killing snakes, and I'm just like, I can't. So I would much rather come hang out with you.
Yeah, I feel that pain. You need a little nerd buddy to hang out with, or else it's not the same fun time you would hope for.
Oh, no, absolutely not. And plus, I mean, it's especially when you stay more towards the eastern side of the U.S., you do tend to find a lot of those much older and cooler places because we, of course, have colonized that side of the U.S. much sooner. And so some of the really cool, really old sites are usually found more on the eastern side of things. So I always kind of enjoy that when we're driving through states up and down the Atlantic seaboard or exploring some of the eastern parts of the U.S., like, coming across those hidden little treasures of just, like, really, really old places that have some really cool, whether it's grave sites, museums, and things like that. And what was it? There was some place I visited not too long ago that was actually, it had been the site of an indigenous city, I guess is the word they used, although I always hesitate to say it because, you know, city in our context and city in their context might be two different things. But it had this massive midden. And if nobody knows what a midden is basically like it's like a junk pile, but it might be for very specific things. And in this case, it was an animal midden. So like all of the bison and deer and all the things they hunted, like it was just this massive midden full of all these bones. And it was so cool to look at. And some of the bones in there were so old that they were beginning some of the mineralization that happens. It's kind of like the beginning stages of fossilization, like they were beginning to absorb some of the minerals of the ground around them, and it was starting to stain the bones. And I was thrilled to see that, and it was such a weird thing to get excited about while the rest of my family is like, we're going to go inside to the museum. You can sit out here and stare at these bones for a few minutes.
That's super cool. I would love to see something like that. So, do you catch yourself ever, like, rubbernecking when you pass by a cemetery?
Oh, you know, you caught me off guard with that. I don't think so. but at the same time, I probably have.
Okay. I'm just making sure. I was just wondering if I'm a weirdo by myself, but it seems like it for the moment. But I recently learned this term called eco-goth, and one day when I caught myself rubbernecking at a cemetery, I was like, no, that's totally eco-goth, and like, I just tried not to be nerded out by it and just like try to embrace the cool side of, oh yeah, I hang out in cemeteries.
Oh, I've already established how cool I think it is what you do. I know that I am guilty of rubbernecking because I am an awkward person, but it's usually not something I notice myself doing. It's something that I have to get called out on, because when I am rubbernecking, I'm not fully aware of myself in that moment. I'm so focused on what I'm staring at. So I probably have, if I'm being honest.
And another thing that I love about, you know, going to the cemetery is, personally, I am a lazy birder. I am not the one that's like, oh, let's wake up at 5 a.m. and be on site to go watch birds. That's not me at all. Like, I want to go at 12 in the afternoon when it's, like, literally the worst time to go birding, and be able to go still see good birds. Or, you know, like, I don't want to exert a lot of energy while birding. Like, I would like to walk on a flat surface. I don't want to hike up hills or have to trip up rocks or have to, you know, I want to make it as easy as possible for me, because birding is already hard work. Like, I'm trying to identify what it is. I'm trying to, like, lift my binoculars up in time, and then my eyes might be, like, in the sun, or, like, eventually lifting up your binoculars and, like, holding it up, you get tired. Like, I don't want to have to add on to that physical exhaustion. Like, I love hiking, but hiking has its time and place and does not intersect with birding for me.
It's really interesting that you say that, because I do, like, I love the spring migration. I'm usually not a huge bird person. Usually I'm more on the herpetology side of things, but to be honest, especially when it comes to things like salamanders, herpetology does require very early mornings or late nights, so even there, I'm like, I'm just going to look for a snake, like, midday when it's hot outside. That's much easier than trying to do anything else. But yeah, when spring migration comes around, I know that I'm going to be living with neck pains from hauling my heavy camera to look up and to try to grab pictures and make observations of birds. It's such a pain. So I can really relate to the idea of, you know, as you said, lazy birding, but I really call that, like, energy conservationist birding. Yeah. Just trying to save that energy for the actual birding, you know? I understand that it's healthy to hike and blah, 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 but I can get my exercise in plenty of ways. When I'm out looking at wildlife, it, like you said, it's already a chore. I don't want to make it more of a chore. I want to focus my energy on the actual process of observing wildlife. So I can really relate to that, and I think that's a really great way to kind of help sell the idea of cemetery birding. So we've already got that. It's you know, not going to be as populated as parks, which is great during the pandemic. There's less people. I was already sold on that part of it. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, you bring up a really good point. You know, people don't usually build a cemetery into a hill. It's on a nice, flat, even surface typically. And so it's a much more easy place to trek, which also adds to the accessibility of it too for people who do struggle with things like hiking. A cemetery might be a much more, you know, physically friendly area for people who maybe don't have the energy or the ability to hike up and down spaces.
Yeah, absolutely that. It definitely help, you know, people who might have some issues hiking, hike or be able to explore out. The word hike lately is really bothering me, because what is hiking besides like a glorified way to talk about walking? So, or even like a stroll, like, I don't know. I'll try to find a different word than hike. For some reason, it just bothers me lately, because I just feel like it's like an added barrier to people.
Oh, that's completely fair.
Right, especially people that live in cities. Like, literally walking on that sidewalk could be a hike. So why not just, like, call it something else?
Let me tell you what, walking Baltimore streets is a hike sometimes. Oh, man.
Well, I am planning to, like, make some videos about, you know, cemetery birding 101 pretty soon. So if people would like a more detailed explanation of, you know, what it is to be a cemetery birder or, like, being an eco-goth, I'm going to use that word so much. I love it so much. Stay tuned on my social media pages for that kind of information. But also, I don't know, just go explore a cemetery for yourself and find out what it means to be a cemetery aficionado on your own. You don't have to follow my rules.
Yeah, and I know that you are on Facebook and Twitter under the same names, Bells with a Z, B-E-L-L-Z, is birding. Are you on Facebook as well? I'm not on there super often, so I haven't checked.
So you said Facebook and Twitter, and then you asked if I had Facebook. I think you meant Instagram?
Oh, you're right, you're right.
I don't do Facebook.
No, you're right. Sorry, you're right. You're on Twitter and Instagram. My brain is just fried today, apparently.
Totally cool.
Yeah, no, I sometimes wonder why I still keep stuff on Facebook, but, you know, I do have followers there, so I guess I'll leave it there for the moment. But yeah, I'm not a fan.
Same. Facebook and Twitter. Wait, no. Instagram and Twitter.
I'm sorry, I ruined it.
Wow. I guess I gotta get on Facebook now.
No, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Dumpster fire. Just spare yourself. It's not worth it. And to be honest, I think that I find, you know, even though Twitter has a lot of the same issues that all other social media does, I find that Twitter is by far my favorite form of social media because of how easy it is to control your content, to, you know, try to reach out to people. It's a much more accessible community, and at the same time, you have so much more control, especially when it comes to how you're treated and how others are treated, like how you can react to that. I can't tell you how often I reported, like, really nasty things people said on Facebook, and then it would come back and say, oh, this didn't violate our community, you know, rules or whatever. But then I've gone and reported, like, really, again, like, really bad things, like racist things, sexist things, all kinds of stuff. And Twitter's like, this definitely violated our rules. We're taking care of this. And I'm like, oh, yes. Thank you, Twitter. Thank you.
For once, that is nice to hear that the internet does justice sometimes.
Yeah, every once in a while, you know, it can't do better, obviously, but, you know, I'll take whatever small victories we can get. But I'm really excited to hear about these videos. I definitely feel like, and I've been thinking about this since our last conversation, where I would really love for you to make, like, stickers. I want you to, like, I want tombstone stickers, like a bird resting on the tombstone, and it'll have, like, your name and then, like, eco-goth or cemetery birding on it. It would be so cool.
Oh, it's definitely in the works right now.
Oh,
don't worry. It is going to happen sooner than you think it will.
I am so psyched to hear that. Like, I am such a sticker hoarder. It's really bad. I literally own, like, hundreds and hundreds of stickers, and I'm one of those people that struggles to use my stickers because I'm scared that, you know, I'm going to stick it on, like, a water bottle, and then I'm going to lose that water bottle, and I'll lose the sticker, and, you know... My brain can't comprehend how replaceable they are.
I feel you on that sentiment. It's actually bad luck to put stickers on water bottles for me at this point.
Oh, no.
I lose the water bottle, and then I lose a good sticker, and I throw a fit every time, so I don't do that anymore.
Oh, not you, too. I literally, like, the only sticker that's on my water bottle right now was a sticker that came as, like, an extra one time. Like, I didn't buy it, and I don't really, like... I'm not emotionally invested in the sticker, and I stuck it to the water bottle, and I've actually had this water bottle now for a long time, despite the sticker. But once that really nice sticker goes on, though, I know it's going to disappear, or it's going to break. I know. I'm hoping that if I can replace my laptop soon. My current laptop has, like, a rigid back, so I can't really put nice stickers on it, so I need to get, like, a smooth laptop so I can put all my really pretty stickers on it, because I just got my spider BLM sticker today that I absolutely love.
I love that sticker. It's on my laptop right now.
I don't have a good enough laptop to put it on yet. I might turn it into a magnet. I actually buy, like, the sheets of sticky magnets, and I will stick the stickers to it and cut it out around the sheet, and I will turn stickers into magnets just to increase their permanence.
Pro tip. Thanks for that.
Oh, yeah. It's ridiculous, too, because, like, making it into a magnet is probably more expensive than if I could buy it as a magnet, but nobody sells them as magnets, so I have to do this.
Noted. I might make magnets now.
Oh my god, please make magnets. It would make my heart so happy. I wish I could show you a picture right now of my fridge, which is literally completely covered in magnets, half of which were originally stickers. And I'm constantly, like, sticking magnets to new spaces. Like, my door's metal, so I can stick magnets to it. So my door is slowly getting covered in magnets. So I will happily add your magnet to my door.
Absolutely.
Well, is there anything you wanted to add before we wrap up? I want to make sure that we don't leave out anything awesome, if there's anything that we missed. I know that we covered a lot. I don't even know if we covered everything that you wanted to discuss, but I didn't want to wrap up without giving you a chance to make sure that you covered all your bases.
No, that is absolutely it. I would just say, you know, y'all, just wear a mask. That's all I gotta say.
Yes. Oh my gosh, that's perfect. Wear a mask, wash your hands, social distance, be respectful. Don't go into a business and then, like, take the mask off or wear it below your nose. Just follow the rules. I want to go to another country someday again, and we're currently, like, banned from everywhere. So just stop, y'all, because some of us have things we want to do. Like, think of all the amazing scientists who can't do their research because we can't go to other countries right now. That's bad.
It's bad.
Ugh, the worst. All right, well, thank you so much for your time, Danielle. It's been so cool learning about this, and I'm really excited to learn that you're putting out some videos because, you know, I even tried to Google some of this content to see if I could, like, make myself even semi-aware of what to expect. And like you said, it's definitely been around, but it's not heavily discussed, I think. So I think you putting out instructional videos is going to be a really great tool in introducing people into this very unique form of birding.
Well, thanks for talking to me. This was a lot of fun.
I'm glad you think so. I'm always here for some positive remarks about this very small podcast that I'm trying to build up.
You're doing great.
Aw, thank you. Well, then we are going to wrap up this episode for today. Thank you all so much for listening. If you guys have any questions, please feel free to reach out to me. My email is thenaturalist@thenaggingnaturalist.com, and you can also contact me via my website, thenaggingnaturalist.com. You can find me and Danielle on social media, on Twitter and Instagram. She, like I said before, she is Bells is Birding, BellsIsBirding. And that's only on Twitter and Instagram. Don't hit her up on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter under nag_naturalist, and you can also find me on Instagram under the Nagging Naturalist. You can also help my podcast by leaving me reviews either on Apple Podcasts or podchaser.com. It does kind of help boost people's visibility. And if you want to listen to other really cool wildlife podcasts, there are a lot of really great ones out there, like Ologies, All Creatures Podcast, Critter Crash, what am I saying? Crittercast, The Wildlife, Just the Zoo of Us, Animals to the Max, Varmints, The Amazing Wildlife Podcast, so many more. And then there's some not-so-safe-for-work ones like Keeper Chat and Petri Dish. They're also great, but please don't listen to them if you are at work. And I will be getting back to you guys next week with our next takeover. Our guest is going to be one of the lovely ladies from MIS, which is Minorities in Shark Sciences. My tongue is tied today. So thank you all again for listening, and we will see you guys next week.